Get ready to jump off sides. We're going to get you with the hard count.
Let's go again!
Here's your host.
Get the gum out of your ears and listen up.
Aaron Nagler.
Don't shut me up!
And Andrew Garda.
I'm freaking velvety smooth.
And here we go.
Here we go indeed. Another Wednesday night. Another edition of the hard count. I'm Andrew Garda. Tonight, we head over to Carolina and listen to old man Jerry Richardson tell that Cam Newton to keep his hippity hop to himself. Head over to the commissioner's office to listen to him lay the smackdown on Kenny Britt. We have your Tebow watch update with a brand new sponsor. We got your uplifting story of the night in Jets camp and your not very uplifting story of the day with Chris Johnson. But first, as always, I'm Andrew Garda. This is The Hard Count, brought to you, as always, by CheeseheadTV.com. Not just your source for all your Packers highlights and opinions, although that is very much what they do. You can also get your fantastic NFL opinions over there. Of course, you can always catch my work there. Every Monday night, Tuesday morning, we've got my From the Press Box column talking about what happened the week and the weekend before. And every Thursday, we've got 10 questions with, this week with Alfie Crow of Big Cat Country, talking some Jaguars. Last week, it was LA Times' own Sam Farmer, NFL stud muffin and expert in all things Los Angeles football, whether it be professional or otherwise. If you haven't checked out the interview with Sam, go back in the archives and do so. Right now, I give you permission to pause the podcast. Sam lays down some great info. I've known him for years. He's one of the nicest guys, and just he's forgotten more football in the last 5 minutes than a lot of people ever will know. So good work always from Sam, and you can head over to latimes.com and read his stuff as well. Keep abreast to his pretty much what's going on in Los Angeles with who's going to move where and whether there's a stadium and all that fun stuff. And, of course, like I said, this week we got Alfie Crow. Next week will be Chris Hansen of the Raiders blog. So if you want to know what's going on around the league, head over to CheeseheadTV.com. Again, not just your source for Packers highlights and opinions, although we do a pretty damn good job of that as well. In fact, Mr. Aaron Nagler, who is not with me tonight, is over cheating on me with Corey Behnke, or I guess he's back with his wife and I'm the mistress. I don't know how this works, kids. I don't know. I don't understand it. But anyway, Nagler and Behnke are over doing Packers transplants pretty much just about as we speak. So you're listening to this in the archives or on the iTunes or whatever you crazy kids do with your interwebs. When you're done, head over, listen to Packers transplants. Tonight, they've got Tremont Williams from the Green Bay Packers on the program. And last week, if you go in the archives, they had Mike Lombardi on. So always big doings over Packers transplants. So again, you don't have to be a Packers fan to go over there. And for the love of God, I hang out in the chat. Someone there come and proselytize with me. Help me explain to the Green Bay faithful that things do not end outside of Lambeau. I know, just saying. It's a long uphill battle. But enough about what goes on in Green Bay or on CheeseheadTV.com. Let's talk NFL football. Of course, another week in the books, another set of playoff games, another bunch of injuries. I touched on this a little bit in my press box column this Monday. We've lost Ryan Williams, rookie for Arizona. We lost Terrell Thomas from the Giants. We've had, of course, Mikel LeSueur went down earlier this offseason. I have to wonder if this is just, I mean, there are a lot of them are freak injuries. Rob Turner, the Jets, backup center. J.J. Watt, rookie from Houston, rolled up on him, broke his leg. Freaky injury. To me, though, I wonder if some of the injuries are coming because everybody's a little rusty. Even 2 weeks of games and, you know, a month of training camp and camp in, people are still rusty. They're being a little sloppy, maybe. Could that be contributing to the injuries? Now, Sam answered a question about this on Cheesehead TV in the 10 Questions article last week, so go back and take a look at it. And he said, you know, I haven't done a study yet. Doesn't seem like it's abnormally high, but maybe when we look back, it will seem so. It definitely seems so to me. There have been a lot of people who have been hurt. And I really liked Ryan Williams and Mikel Ashour this year. I thought both of them could have a pretty significant impact with their teams. And Ryan Williams is a PCL injury. Ashour is an ACL injury. Both of them are, you know, 5, 6, 7 months of rehab. They've got age on their side. They're both young. So coming back from it may not be that big a deal, but especially Ashour's, a lot of people who have that injury, I think it was 1/3 of the people who get that injury don't come back from it. So I wonder if this is what's happened with the lockout. We've had a little bit of sloppy play. People are behind. I mean, we've talked and we will talk a little bit about Tim Tebow and how, you know, the lockout, aside from physically, I don't think anybody's been hurt more not being able to be in the training room and working with his coaches than Tim Tebow. But I wonder if we're seeing some injuries and some people getting banged up because there just, you know, was no long-term interaction with the club. Then we had the lockout training camps and we had all that stuff, but it's not the same thing. Working out on your own is not the same thing. And some of the guys who, you know, like Steve Smith now with the Philadelphia Eagles, hasn't gotten back to where he hoped he would be at this point. I can't help but wonder if the rehab not happening in the building in, you know, for him, you know, the Giants training facility at the time, I can't imagine that didn't hurt at least a little bit. So I wonder if this spate of injuries we've seen, this laundry list of people who are banged up, Arian Foster with his hammy, I mean, it just kind of goes on and on. I wonder if this is sort of the aftershock of the lockout, just a little bit. And speaking of aftershock, by the way, if you were on the East Coast on Tuesday and had that earthquake, I said this on Twitter, as the West Coast representative in New York City on behalf of California and most of the West Coast, Seattle, Washington, parts of Oregon, you all who went through that earthquake on the East Coast yesterday, you get your minor California merit badge. Because a 5'8", a 6, I mean, it's not nothing, but that's not a big earthquake. And it was weird. I'm sitting in the office, all these people around me, and you feel the rumbling, and you're like, wow, a big truck going past. And then you're like, no, that's going too long. And my thought was, oh, crap, this is an earthquake. Except for somewhere in the back of my little rat brain, I'm thinking, no, it can't be an earthquake. This is New York. I live in New York City. This is not an earthquake. It doesn't happen. It's not happening right now. If I say it's an earthquake, everyone in the office, they're going to think I'm insane. But I kept going, and sure enough, it's an earthquake. And it was in North Virginia. It seems like there wasn't a tremendous loss of life. I mean, I lived through the Northridge earthquake in the 90s. That was nasty. That was bad. Now, this was not bad, but this, you know, the East Coast is not prepared for these things. So If you went through it yesterday and you didn't wet yourself, you get a merit badge. And my only two pieces of advice, get in a door frame, get away from glass windows. That's really it. If you're in Manhattan, you can run outside the building, but let's be honest, if it hits hard enough to knock those buildings down, yeah, there's not very far to run when you have a giant building come down. It's not going to happen. We're not going to have a huge earthquake here. California is laughing at the fact that we think it is. But then again, you can mock California, especially Los Angeles, because when it rains, it sounds a lot like a lot of people did yesterday when we had the earthquake. I did say that with a potential hurricane hitting the tri-state area this weekend, if that happens, we've had the earthquake, we've had a hurricane, all we need is a tornado, and we've hit the trifecta of suck in terms of weather disasters here. No fun. Anyway, well, you know, actually, a little earthquake like that is kind of fun. It took me back to my first earthquake, if I can drone on for another, you know, 15 seconds, 20 seconds here. I was in Los Angeles. I was going to USC. I was living in a fraternity house. And I was sitting in my room, and I was watching the Hank Gathers story. And for those of you who don't know Hank Gathers, Gathers was a small college basketball player who had a heart defect that I guess nobody knew about, if I remember this correctly, and, you know, was playing and shot a basket and collapsed and died on the court. And so they had, I think it was ESPN, had the Hank Gathers story on. I'm watching it, and it gets to the point, and tell me this isn't universal, bizarre karmic emergence, but Gathers takes his shot, he collapses the court, he's dying on the court, and all of a sudden, like, I'm just feeling, like, all shaky. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is a fantastic scene. Like, look how emotional I am. I'm all shaking. Until another former New Yorker, because he was living in California at the time, my friend Keith came running, "It's an earthquake!" And he's completely freaking out, which was even funnier, because he was a couple years older than me, and had been through these. So he's wetting his pants, and I'm just sitting there going, oh, this is the greatest emotional scene I've ever seen. Oh, no, actually, it's just an earthquake. I had my fair share of weird crap in Los Angeles. I went through the riots. I went through the Northridge earthquake. Smog. Yeah, that you start wondering if there is, you know, something to the Bible, and maybe Los Angeles is on somebody's target. I don't know. Anyway, enough weather-related. Guys, you keep getting me off football. Now I'm talking about, geology and earthquakes and crap. Ah, man, my listeners, our listeners are just, you guys like the tangent. That's all there is to it. Enough. So let's head over to Carolina and Jerry Richardson, who apparently told Tom Sorensen of the Charlotte Observer that when he interviewed Cam Newton pre-draft, he made a comment that Newton was dressed perfectly, as if, you know, most of the guys he's interviewing came in sweats. Probably not. He said to Richardson, to Newton, he said, "Do you have any tattoos?" And he said, "No, sir, I don't have any." Do you have any piercings?" "No, sir, I don't have any." "We want to keep it that way. We want to keep no tattoos, no piercings, and I think you've got a very nice haircut." And when Sorensen was talking to him, it was Charlie Rose, because they were referring to an interview he did with Charlie Rose. He said, "No, I just sound reasonable to me." Here's another quote from Jerry Richardson. "I wish they'd keep that hippity-hop crap off the television. I don't understand what these kids are listening to with their long-haired Metallica." Okay, I understand, actually. I'm sort of on the fence with this, and I said this on Twitter. I'm uncomfortable with it, but I totally understand where he's coming from. I understand that Jerry Richardson is concerned with the image of the face of his franchise, the potential face of his franchise, Cam Newton. And it's interesting, I had a discussion with Joe Goodberry on Twitter. And those of you who don't know, Joe is a writer for CincyJungle.com. And he was saying, it's funny, his brother was like, "I don't want my quarterback tatted up." And when we were talking back and forth, and I said, "I guess the stigma's still there with tattoos," he was like, "Both my brother and I have tattoos. He just doesn't want his quarterback to have tats." And, you know, but you want your middle linebacker to be like an ex-convict monster and be totally tatted up, but not your quarterback. I find that interesting. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this as I get into this. So email me at thunderingblurb@gmail.com or hit me up on Twitter. I'd really love to hear what your thoughts are on this. I have a tattoo to disclose. I have a little chain of sharks around my arm. Meaning for me, for those who care. I used to surf. I don't really have time much anymore. I lived in California a long time. I miss the ocean. I like my sharks. It has some meaning to me. So I don't really care. I mean, certainly sometimes you see someone with tats and you have a snap judgment. And just like anything else, you may have some judgment or some just overall, I guess, bias towards the way any person looks. Not just tattoos, but anything. But, really, it doesn't bother me that much. I know it does other people. And I think there are some environments where visible tats or visible piercings might not be appropriate. Being a football player? I don't know. I mean, listen, you know, Brady, Manning, Sanchez, like all of these guys, if they have tattoos, they're not anywhere you're going to see them. These guys have the endorsements. They're the face of their franchises to some extent. I don't know. Is it a problem? I don't care. And it sounds, I mean, I make fun of Jerry Richardson with the hippity hop thing, but it does sound generational. Like, it was pointed out to me, you know, again, Twitter name dropping here at an astonishing rate, but Dave Goldberg, who I've talked about before, I've covered the NFL, like, all over the place. I can't even begin to tell you all the different places he wrote or writes. Reminded me that Richardson played with Johnny Unitas. You know? Unitas, that set your watch crew cut that he had going on. He has a very certain feeling as to how he thinks someone should look. If they're going to be professional, if they're going to work for him. The Yankees do this. I don't know if they do it anymore, because I don't know that it's possible to really enforce it across the board anymore. But they used to have a thing for, you know, beards and long hair. I mean, it's within, on the one hand, you want maybe the face of your franchise to project the least offensive image possible. And as there is a stigma with tattoos for some people, maybe you don't want that possibly driving them off before they get to know this guy. Also, you own a company. You're the CEO of a company. It's within your rights to run a dress code. If you want everybody to show up in suits, you do that. Now, we're talking about adults, and we're talking about an entertainment era and an entertainment area. We're talking about, I mean, how do you, across? You're basically saying Cam Newton can't do something that the entire rest of the locker room can. I mean, Jeremy Shockey is completely tatted up. And I bet you would have a hard time throwing Jerry Richardson's, you know, lark without hitting someone without a tattoo. It's part of the culture. It's part of the culture of athletes. It's part of a lot of African-American cultures. It's part of a lot of cultures, period. It's part of youth culture. I mean, you don't even need to get into race or ethnicity. It's part of a youth culture. And it's moments like that that sometimes I'm reminded that on some level, some of the owners really, there's a generational gap between them and a large portion of their audience. What worries and disturbs them, a very, by all accounts, and no duh, conservative group of people, what may worry them doesn't worry a lot of other people. I guess in the end, it's Jerry Richardson's party. It's his company. How he wants to run it is fine. I'm not going to hold it against him. I just think that if that's what you're worried about, if that really was something you felt like you needed to ask in an interview, think that maybe you're worried about the wrong things when it comes to your football team. Maybe you should concentrate on getting guys who are hard workers, guys who are going to be overachievers, guys who are going to be laying it all on the field for you every week, regardless of the having tattoos or having an earring or anything else or not. Those are the guys you want. I'm not saying Cam Newton isn't that. By all accounts, he's worked his tail off right now. I'm just saying, when you go into an interview, maybe it really isn't a high priority to ask the guy, do you have tats? Are you thinking of getting tats? Let's not have any tats. I mean, it sounds like my grandfather talking to me. You know, again, though, this goes back to, nobody's going to see Jerry Richardson in his owner's box. They're going to see the Carolina Panthers. And ultimately, I don't think anybody gives a damn whether Cam Newton has one tattoo, no tattoos, or a billion tattoos every inch of his body. If he could throw the football and he could win games, nobody cares. Ultimately, the product on the field is what we're worried about. I think what Cam Newton does to his body within legal bounds is his business. But again, this is why I'm on the fence. I understand why a corporation or an owner would feel this way. I don't necessarily agree with it. And there it is. Again, I'd love to hear your take on this, because I've heard some interesting takes already today. I'd love to hear your take on it. Thunderingblurb@gmail.com. Hit me up. Let me know what you think. I'm curious. I really am. Because I know that my opinion isn't necessarily the at-all, end-all, be-all of the conversation. I know there are plenty of people I've talked to who have issues with one tat or multi-tats or no issues. And I'm just kind of curious if that ever factors in, you know, be it when you're buying a ticket or a product or thinking about any of these guys at all. Let's move away from Jerry Richardson, say goodbye to him on his lark, wave as he goes, goodbye, Jerry. And move on to, well, I guess another father figure in Roger Goodell, or as I like to call him, Sheriff Goodell. Well, he met with Titans receiver Kenny Britt on Tuesday. Of course, Britt, who was looking for some sort of world record by being arrested, I think, 3 times in 3 months. It was pretty impressive. And he met with Britt to kind of talk about what's going on, I guess what the next step's going to be, what his thoughts were. Britt said he didn't scold me or anything. He was happy. Not happy that I was there and for those situations, but he's a nice type of guy, a very likable guy. Which, by the way, is interesting that he said that, because there are so many players and so many people talking about how, you know, nobody's going to have any respect or love for Goodell because of all the lockout crap. And ultimately, I think once some time has passed, I don't think that's going to factor in. I think people like James Harrison are always going to hate him because of the way the game's going and because of all the fines. And I'm not saying he's wrong for doing it. I understand why he's aggravated. But I think there are going to be plenty of players who are fine with Roger Goodell. Anyway, Britt told Jim Wyatt of the Tennessean, we'll find out sometime later this week what he decides to do. I guess Goodell asked him some questions about certain situations and, you know, what happened and all that. And you know, he said, you know, the meeting went well. This is the interesting part of this. I mean, that's interesting, but the interesting part is what happens here. All of this stuff was during the lockout. During the lockout, there was no CBA, there was no NFLPA. So do the conduct policies apply when the players are locked out? Could you not argue that had the players not been locked out, perhaps Kenny Britt's not in those stupid situations? I know, bear with me for a second. It's Kenny Britt, I know, I get it, but let's just say, in bizarro world, where up is down, that Britt wouldn't have been in trouble. If you're not under the CBA, I mean, and this goes for Aqib Talib, too, from Tampa Bay. What can you do? If they get fined or suspended, is the NFLPA going to cause a ruckus? Or is the NFLPA going to let it go? I understand the policy, but I think as much as maybe Britt should be brought, you know, to some discipline, if you're not paying him and you're actively saying he's not allowed to work, well, let's be honest, kids. Do you really have the right to discipline him? I don't know that you do. I don't think you do. And it's interesting because this kind of dovetails off the Cam Newton, Jerry Richardson thing. What kind of power do the owners and the commissioner have over these guys who are men? I wanted to say kids, they're not kids. They're men. Some of them make kid-like decisions, but these are grown individuals. At what point and in what situations should the league and owners have a say? It's talked about in a way of protecting the shield, protecting the product, protecting everybody's earning power. And there's certainly merit in that. Like I said with Richardson, there's merit in wanting to make sure that you offend the least amount of people before they even buy a ticket. Now, I'd argue that there's a 0% chance that someone who wanted to buy a Carolina Panther ticket isn't going to buy it because Cam Newton has a tattoo. Unless it said something like horrifically racist, ignorant, or evil. And in that case, there'd be other problems. I also don't know that people aren't buying tickets to see the Titans because Kenny Britt's an idiot. Because Kenny Britt can't stay out of trouble. I don't know. Like, what tarnishes the image of the league? What is the image of the league? I don't think the image of the league is this, like, clean-cut, you know, let's go back to this take, a clean-cut Johnny Unitas group. Like, I don't think that's the image of the league, and I don't think anybody believes it. I don't think anybody cares. We're lining up to buy tickets after a lockout where they essentially pissed on us and called it rain. After a lockout where still you have owners like Jed York who are out there saying, the 18 games are for the fans. It's to protect you from yourselves. If there were two less preseason games, we wouldn't have the undesirables in the stadium. Let's not start pulling at that thread because the entire world will fall apart. But you still have owners who are telling us that the 18-game season's all for us. I mean, ultimately, we're still buying tickets. The public is still buying tickets. There are some teams struggling, but that's economy. Maybe it's worse because of the lockout a little bit, but by and large, nobody's dying. Nobody's bleeding right now. Money is not bleeding out. Money is coming in. So does it really matter? Is anybody really worried about what Aqib Talib or Kenny Britt did in the offseason when they weren't under contract and they were actively not allowed to work? When there was no CBA and no NFLPA? Ostensibly, they could have gone and flipped burgers if they wanted to. Does it really matter? I'm curious to see what Goodell and the league do here. And I don't know that there's a right answer. He has laid a very hard line down. And that's fine. That's good. But once you lay that line down, you kind of need to follow up on it. It's like the discussion that I've had with people about the NCAA and the University of Miami. And we've talked a little bit about this here and there before, so I'm not going to beat it to death. But you set a bar when you came down hard on USC. What Miami did, allegedly, is a billion times worse. So either you come out and say, holy crap, USC, we're really sorry we overdid it, but we're not going to make the same mistake twice by overdoing it with Miami. Or you really need to lay the hammer down on Miami. I can tell you right now, the NCAA is not man enough to do the first. Being as how they are leaning on the NFL and begging them to enforce their rules, i.e. Terrell Pryor being suspended for 5 games before he's even under contract. And oh, by the way, Terrell Pryor may fight that.
I am Jack's complete lack of surprise.
Really? What? That's incredible. The hell you say? The guy who said he was going to take a punishment so he could play in a bowl game and then skipped out on that punishment is going to try and skip out on a punishment the NFL wants to put on him? No. Say it ain't so, Joe. But seriously, the NCAA can't enforce their own stuff. They're asking the NFL to do it for them. It's really what it is. The NFL kind of has a vested interest in doing it. But really, at what point do we hit a wall where it's, you know what, enough? That's the limit of our power. Does Goodell at some point roll back the punishment and say, all right, maybe we were a little harsh to begin with to set the tone. You guys got it now. Don't screw up. Maybe take the foot off the gas. Can he do that? I don't know that he can. I don't know that you'll be able to see him ease the gas off until there's a new commissioner. And I'm not saying Goodell should leave office or anything. I'm just saying they may be stuck like this. They set the bar really high. Now you got to reach the bar, or you got to admit that bar is too high. The NFL is usually pretty good about kind of nodding that maybe they screwed up in a way that college football is not. But I'm not really sure there's a graceful way to back out of this. this Kenny Britt thing could blow up. I'm very curious to see how this plays out. I can guarantee you that it will be a subject of a column or the show next week. Because they're going to give Kenny Britt, if they're going to nail him, they're going to do it very soon because they want to give the Titans enough time to replace him and plan to not have him for however long it is. That's how the NFL goes. So, it'll be interesting to watch. And again, there's another thing I'd love to hear your take on. Love to hear your opinion. ThunderingBlurb@gmail.com. Hit me up. Let me know what you think. Should Kenny Britt be disciplined? How much? Should Aqib Talib? What is the limit of Roger Goodell's power? What's right and what's wrong? And is there a right and wrong? I mean, let's face it, we're Americans. We like black and white. We like right and wrong. Bruce Willis on one side, Alan Rickman on the other. You may enjoy watching both of them, but you know the bad guy, you know the good guy. Yippee-ki-yay. We like it simple. This is not simple. This is a gray area. Gray areas make everybody's hair stand up. Let me know how your hair is standing. Lord knows that came out wrong. Let's move on. As I promised, we don't have Favre Watch.
Tebow Watch,
welcome
by the way.
Brought to you tonight by the Football Guys Android app. People loved our iPhone app last year. It was like having just the whole of the Football Guys content in the palm of your hands during your draft, during when you're sitting at the bar trying to figure out who you're going to start. Right there, 50,000 pages of content in the palm of your hand. We had a big outcry for people who had Android phones. When's going to be my time, they asked. When are we going to have an Android app? Well, you spoke, we heard. All the great content that you've come to know and love, now accessible anywhere you take your phone. If you have an Android, you have the Football Guys app. Now, it does require a subscription to Football Guys in order to access the subscriber content. So, of course, I once again point out that Joe Bryan and David Dodds, who offer the subscription for $27.95 for the year, have a money-back guarantee. So you can go try it out, and if you don't fall in love, they'll give you your money back. But I'm telling you, you're not going to need your money back. And now you've got a mobile app for the Android that accesses everything of Football Guys. You want your rankings? You got your rankings right in the palm of your hand. You want the Audible with Cecil Sigmund and occasionally Matt Waldman? Right in the palm of your hand. You don't even need the download. Let's say you're traveling. You don't have access to your iTunes account. You don't have access to anything. You're going to have to stream it. The iPhone and Android apps allow you to stream the latest Audibles right there on your phone. You don't need to download anything. The apps themselves are free to download, but like I said, require subscription access subscriber content. If you got an iPhone or iPad, you just go search FBG Mobile in iTunes for the free download. You do the same in the Android market. Again, 50,000 pages of content in the palm of your hand. This is where the future is. This is where the edge is for your live drafting needs. Head over to Football Guys, get a subscription, and then download that Android or iPhone app. So with that out of the way, this Android app Football Guys sponsored Tebow Watch can begin. Things are not going well for Timmy Tebow, as he has been demoted to third string behind Brady Quinn. What the hell, Tim? Brady Quinn's down. Been playing pretty well. Been practicing pretty well. And of course, Kyle Orton's been practicing well. Tebow hasn't. And I've said before, and I will continue to say, nobody, with the exception of people who are injured, has probably been hurt in terms of their player development the way that Tebow has. I think being away from the team, not having some time to get with John Fox and with his quarterback coach, who's the same guy he was last year, by the way, I think has hurt him. Now, still, I said this today. Sorry, Cam Newton. Sorry, Mike Vick. Tim Tebow is still the most divisive player in football today. And it's the same stuff that happened when he was drafted. people were saying there seem to be two camps, and they don't like each other. There's the Tebow should get a shot. Why are they holding him back? And the fringes of this, there's actually conspiracy talk that the media is trying to take him down, and Fox doesn't like him. He's not going to give him a shot. And then on the other side, the people is like, see, I told you, Tebow sucks. He was never going to be a good quarterback. He's terrible. Listen, the reality is somewhere in the middle. First of all, sure, I can imagine, despite the fact that the Denver Broncos said that they hired guy who was going to, who already was open to the Tebow possibility. And had they been able to move Orton, I think Tebow's your starting quarterback. That aside, coach is going to come in. He's not going to have loyalty to guys who aren't his guys. And Tebow's not Fox's guy. So he's not going to hand him anything. I think McDaniels, maybe he would have had the patience. Maybe he wouldn't have. But I think ultimately, I think he mollycoddled Tebow a little bit. And yes, I did just say mollycoddled. But I think maybe, you know, Fox isn't going to give him much rope. And people keep saying, practice? Well, it's just practice.
We're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice.
Look what Tebow does in games. Look what he did in last year for 3 games. He rocked. All right, let's get a little perspective here. His 3 games were against Oakland, where he didn't do much through the air, but he ran the hell out of the ball. That was good. That was a good game. A historically awful Texans secondary that he lit up. And guess what? You're supposed to do that against that historically awful Texans secondary that was so bad that they've hired like 45 free agents to try and fix it. And then a banged up San Diego Chargers team. Now, I was told earlier tonight that you're just dismissing those games. I'm not dismissing those games. What I'm telling you is, have some perspective. It's not like he went out and rolled Baltimore, New York, Jets, and the Packers. They're 3 teams who were not doing very well at the time. Does that negate what he did? No. But some perspective is it wasn't a true gauge of how he's doing. But again, where he was last November, December, January, and where he is right now, 2 totally different things. They almost have nothing to do with each other. And people keep saying, he's been in the preseason games. He's done okay in them. He's looked rough. He makes slow reads. He reacts slow. He doesn't get the ball out quick. And it's not just mechanics. He's thinking about it. Now, I don't see him practice. So I can't really say, you know, with real honest truth, that he's practicing badly. I know some people in the Denver media, some people you know, like Cecil Lammy, they've watched training camp, they've watched practices. He's having problems. I don't think it's out of the realm of the possibility that maybe, just maybe, Timmy Football ain't ready for prime time. Does that mean he never will be? No. I still say that he's got a shot. And I don't think it's mechanics. He needs to work on digesting the plays quicker. He needs to figure out a way to process things quicker. And he needs to find a way to be more accurate. Yes, he had a 50-yard bomb right into his receiver's hands in stride. Huzzah. He hasn't done that enough. Listen, in a perfect world, and prior to the season, I said this, in a perfect world, Orton's gone, and this is Tebow's team, but that didn't work. And I don't think you can bench Orton when he's playing well, because you think maybe, possibly, Tebow might do better if you put him into a real game. Maybe, possibly, sort of, kind of, we really hope. This isn't a team that's looking to suck for luck. This team has to put out a winner. This team wants to put out a winner. Maybe they don't have to. Nobody has to do anything, but they want to put a winner out. And right now, they've got a very weird problem. Between the 20s, Kyle Orton is the better quarterback. He will move the chains. He will move the ball. He will do well from 20 to 20. When he hits that red zone, the wheels come off. Kyle Orton doesn't get you those hard touchdowns, and he's not bringing you back from being down two touchdowns. Just doesn't happen often with him. Tim Tebow is not as good between the 20s, but when he gets in the red zone, he can make things happen. I don't know, you know. Can Tebow improve enough? Do you throw him in the fire? I just can't see them having him starting with Orton on the bench when Orton has outplayed him all preseason. And no, those three games don't automatically give him a start over Orton. That's not how it works. I don't care how many games he won in at Florida. And oh, by the way, please stop telling me that all he does is win. Because a lot of college football players do is win. That doesn't mean that they win in the NFL. There is a laundry list of players who, quote unquote, and you can't see the air quotes, but I'm doing them, just win in college football. And they don't just win in real football. Ooh, sorry, NFL football. I was a bit offside. So things are not going exceptionally well for Timmy Tebow. He's always been a project. We always knew he was going to be 2, maybe 3 years before he was a viable starting quarterback. I don't understand why people are all bent out of shape, because here we are in year two, and he's still not necessarily a viable starting quarterback. I think people are worried, people being people who are huge Tebow fans, I think people are worried that Fox and the staff that's there, especially the new staff, isn't behind Tebow, and it's going to end up, you know, screwing the Broncos. Listen, Tebow was overdrafted. I'm sorry to break the news to you, but Tebow shouldn't have gone in the first round. Frankly, neither should Sean Moreno. The two connecting points in that sounds like Osh Hick-Angels. But honestly, you know, the best theory I've heard is maybe Josh McDaniels, if the Denver Broncos cut Tebow, and they're not going to cut Tebow, maybe Josh McDaniels will pick him up, convince St. Louis to pick him up. Why? They have Sam Bradford, for Christ's sake. I mean, this is sort of the delusion that some, not all, but some Tebow fans are under, that he's better than Sam Bradford. I'm sorry, he's not. Not now. Maybe not ever. Maybe one day he will be. He's not now. But Josh McDaniels made a couple of very weird choices. He reached for Tebow. And I feel bad for Bronco fan because, frankly, it's looking like that draft was a huge... That draft is just a mess. At the end of the day, Tebow is still a developing project. And I think people are worried that he's not going to get the chance. And the staff won't be patient. He's not their guy. He was overdrafted. There's a lot of pressure for him to perform maybe sooner than he should have to. I say, calm down. Let Tebow sit on the bench. As long as Orton's playing okay, let him sit there. Let him learn. Don't put pressure on him. He wants it. He wants to win. He wants to play. He wants to be a starting quarterback. He'll have his time here or somewhere else. But let him have the best chance to succeed. And to me, if he's struggling now, don't force him into a position where he has to accelerate his learning. I don't think it's going to go well. I think Tebow has a shot at being an NFL quarterback. I think letting him take his time a little bit more, giving him a little more rope, working with him a little more slowly. I'm telling you, Bronco fan, that may end up being the best answer for you. Orton's only around for another year. I don't think Brady Quinn's going to be able to keep up what he's done. I think Tebow will have a shot in a year or so. But I think Orton gives you the best chance right now to not have to repeat that number two pick. We'll see. Moving on, I promised you an uplifting story of the night, and I didn't actually have this plan until the middle of the day when I saw this article. And you may accuse me of going Jets on you, but this is a great story. Martin Tivisaw, otherwise known as MTV, He's a player for the Jets. He was on the practice squad all last year. Got the start over Kenrick Ellis, third-round rookie pick for the Jets at defensive tackle this past weekend. MTV might not be in this situation, but for a phone call back in 2007 to a defensive coordinator at Santa Rosa, California Junior College. The DC's name was Lenny Wagner. And MTV called him after his cousin had been murdered in a break-in. Family and friends, pretty sure they knew who did it. They were looking to Martin to lead the charge for vengeance. Martin, very wisely, called Coach Wagner, who told him, "You need to leave now, or you're going to end up the same way." 4 years later, MTV is playing in New Jersey. I'd like to say New York, but the stadium's in New Jersey. So is the practice facility. And has a real shot at making the team. I mean, this is a kid whose family life was a wreck. He wasn't in a good home. His brother was in a lot of trouble, went into a group house, brought Martin with him, and the kid has pretty much been behind the eight ball the entire time. And here is a man who plays incredibly hard, incredibly well. You know, and even, you know, after high school, he was at junior college, transferred to Arizona State, didn't work out, went back to junior college, continued to play at a lower level, but didn't give up. Started out on the practice squad, never missed practice, always ready to play, you know, pretend he was the offensive line so the defense could practice against him. Broke his hand, but didn't miss a practice at all last year. Finally got a shot in the AFC title game because the Jets were a little thin in the O-line. When Rex Ryan told the team the Wednesday before the game that Martin was going to be active, the entire room broke into applause. That's the type of guy this is. That's the type of guy who puts on his helmet every day with no expectation other than tomorrow he gets to put on his helmet again, but puts his whole self out there to make sure that his team has the best opportunity to win a game. Last Friday, when he lined up to play on the scout team offense, said he had left tackle. Jets defensive coordinator Mike Pettine told him, "Don't do that. I want you on the starting defense instead." That's when he knew he was going to be starting for the Jets this past weekend. I think it's a great story about perseverance. I think it's a great story about reaching out to people, to knowing when you need help and being man enough to ask for help. And on the other end of it, which Coach Wagner, knowing what to say, when to say it, and having the character to where that young man listened to him. I think it's fantastic, and I hope that he continues to be a Jet. And if not, I hope that he finds a place somewhere in the NFL, because the NFL needs more guys. You know, you want to worry about Kenny Britt. You want to worry about Cam Newton's tats, all of that crap. Here's a guy who maybe should be getting more pub and may never really, and it probably won't bother him. And I probably should have flipped that story with this one, because we're going to end in crisis for the Tennessee Titans. Your non-uplifting story of the day: Chris Johnson and the Tennessee Titans meet but are still a Grand Canyon distance apart. According to Jim Wyatt of the Tennessean, the meeting today, Wednesday, between the Titans and Chris Johnson really didn't finish anything. And in fact, the Titans came away saying, "We don't know that we decided anything." This is going into the season. You can kind of smell it right now. I don't think it's going to get done before the first week. And the longer that Johnson holds out, the more worried I am that he gets hurt the moment he steps back on the field. There are certainly guys who have stepped on the field after a long holdout and been fine. You can go all the way back to Emmitt Smith when he was a rookie. Then there are guys like Steven Jackson or Darrell Revis who hold out, and they end up with little nicks, little strains, hurts, aches, and they miss time. If you're the Tennessee Titans, maybe you think about paying Chris Johnson, because he's pretty much your offense right now. Yes, I know you're all hot on Jake Locker right now, but honestly, really? I don't know that you want to go into games with just Locker. Javon Ringer's a fine backup running back. I did a breakdown of the Titans for footballguys.com in the preseason. You can check it out. I believe that's not subscriber content. But you've got an issue where he's, even if he's good, he's not as good, Javon Ringer, as Chris Johnson. Chris Johnson is your most dynamic weapon on offense. And he's grossly overplaying his contract. And all the people who complain about, you know, all these players that make so much money, even the least of them, shut up and get on the field. First of all, let me point to Mikel Ashour and Ryan Williams, whose careers could be done. The money they made for their contract this year could be all they make in football. That's how brutally short the NFL is. Not for long, NFL. So get what you can while you can. You don't have to be a douche about it. But when you have the opportunity to get some money, get it. Why? Because they'll cut you as quick as blinking. Leon Washington can tell you that. He decided he was going to play through a contract that he was underpaid with. Busted up his leg. Did the Jets give him a new contract? No, they cut him. He ended up with Seattle. Or actually, I take that back. They traded him. They got rid of him. Not for long. So I totally understand Johnson's point of view, and I don't think he's wrong. Now, should he be the highest paid guy, period, in the NFL? That I don't know about. He could be up there. I see no reason why he shouldn't. And you got to think that the Titans are pissed off with the Larry Fitzgerald contract, because that's definitely throwing things off. But they are far apart. And if the Titans thought they were going to have a very long season before, if Chris Johnson doesn't come through and play, it's going to be even longer. The wide receivers there are good, but not great. Beyond Kenny Britt, who's great, but a head case and can't stay out of trouble and may end up suspended. What are you going to do if you don't have Chris Johnson? Which doesn't mean, you know, hand him the keys to the franchise, but I think you may want to make him a really lucrative offer. The fact that both of them walked away from the meeting and said, I don't really know what happened, that's disturbing. And that tells me we're going into week one with Chris Johnson not in a Titans uniform. And for the Titans, that's nothing but bad. We'll watch this. We'll keep monitoring it. And of course, we'll keep you up to date with it and every other situation in the NFL here on The Hard Count. I will be back same bat time, same bat channel next Wednesday. You can catch this show on the iTunes feed for Cheesehead TV, or you can stream it or download it right from CheeseheadTV.com itself. Also check out Cheesehead Radio and Packers Transplants while you're there. And of course, every Monday you can check out my work, my Monday Night Tuesday column from the Press Box, and of course the 10 question series, which is going on and will be every Thursday. Tomorrow, Alfie Crow from Big Pack Country, Jacksonville Jaguar talk, and some Games of Thrones talk, because Alfie and I are both horrors for that show and the book series. So that's it. Thank you very much for joining me today. I will see you next week. On behalf of the absent Aaron and the thieving Corey Behnke, as well as all the staff at CheeseheadTV.com, thank you for joining us both here and on the site. Have yourself an outstanding weekend. Enjoy the preseason football, and I will see you next week here on The Hard Count. You've been listening to The Hard Count with Aaron Nagler and Andrew Garda.
Let's go again!
Word!